Downey's amazing, right?
As a black man, I was not offended.
I'm really happy to hear that.
I thought it would, he pulled it off. But
yeah.
You're just getting better and better and better.
Thank you very much. Can we get married or something? This is too good.
I'm a Robert
Thank you.
Downey addict.
No, I am too.
You do,
yeah.
I'm like, I'm there. And when I saw...
I'm a big Downey fan too. And, you know, there were very few people I thought who could pull off that role. And that was really important to me, that the actor who was playing Kirk Lazarus in the movie was one of the most respected actors of his generation. It had to be a guy you actually bought as the real deal. And Downey is, you know, he was like this incredible bargain basement steal of a genius actor at that point in time, you know, because he was just, you know, he just about to do Iron Man. Every actor in our business respects him hugely, but he's obviously been through troubles in his life, and he's in such a good place in his life, and we were so lucky to be able to say, okay, right now, this moment in time, I can work with Robert, I can send him the script, and he got it, and I just felt so fortunate, because there are very few guys I think could have pulled that part off.
It's funny.
What are you
funny
concerned?
He called you an asshole. Maybe play that role.
Of course he did.
It's good to hear that you...
You said it in a nice way. You said it in a nice way.
No, I think that would be funny. But you
of course, Downey's irony will play so well in print.
You know that what risk he was taking, possibly taking with this role?
Of course. I mean, I think we all did. It was, you know, that was the nature of the movie. And, you know... Here's, you know, the thing, when you're making a movie like this and you don't know, I didn't know how at the end of the day it was going to play, how it was going to come off. I knew what our intention was, so you have to sort of blindly, and I say blindly in that you have to trust your instinct and go in and commit to what you're doing, knowing that on the other end of it you'll see how it works, and then you deal with that when you get to the point where you have a movie cut together. So I give him credit for committing fully, because it wouldn't have worked if he hadn't commit fully. If he had held back or said, you know, maybe this is too offensive, maybe this isn't right, it wouldn't have worked. So he got so into it, and he was so clear about what his intention was as the character, that I think that confidence is what makes an audience feel okay with it. And he has just a natural thing where people are like, this guy's coming from the right place. I buy this guy. And so then... You know, that was the brave thing, I think, the courage that he had to do that, you know? And it was important also in the setup of the movie that there was, that Brandon T. Jackson's character was always there, in my mind, just sort of saying what an audience member might be saying at this point, you know, what like a sane person might be saying. Yeah, and that was really important, just somebody calling him on it, and, you know, and so it was an interesting process, but, you know, he's amazing.
Now, you wait 9 years to make this movie. Yeah. Why it took so long?
It really was about, well, a few things. I mean, the script took 9 years. I say the script took like 6 or 7 years. Obviously, I was doing other stuff in between. But the script took a long time to get to a point where we felt good enough about it. Because it was sort of complicated. It was complicated in terms of figuring out, okay, I knew the first act. We had the first like 30 pages like 9, 10 years ago. And then we knew what the second act was and the third act. But to actually execute it and make it funny enough and feel like it sustained itself on the page was just took us a while. And about 3.5 years ago, we did a read-through of it, like a table like this. And that was good, and it helped sort of like go, okay, we could actually make this movie, it could be good. But it still wasn't quite there, and then we went back and rewrote after that. And then I felt good about the script. And then it was a matter of, like, I gave it to Steven Spielberg and Stacey Snyder, and they liked it. And they said, all right, we want to take a chance with this movie and do it. And I don't know if another studio would have done it like that, because, you know, DreamWorks is a very filmmaker oriented place. So I think, you know, and the fact that I had a really small part in Empire of the Sun, you know, and was one of the inspirations really for the movie for me, I was really happy to be able to do it with Steven, and just, you know, it just felt like 20 years later to be able to have him have the confidence in saying, I want to make this movie and take a chance, because they needed to support it on the level of, you know, it's not like a small movie in terms of budget, and it needed that to be able to sort of satirize what it, you know, to be what it was satirizing, you know. So they sort of like had this level of like, wow, it is that kind of movie, but it's also satirizing that kind of movie.
So how did you get Tom Cruise, and how did that work out?
I sent the script to Tom just to, because I knew that I wanted him to be a part of it. I wasn't, and I didn't, I didn't know how, and at the time there wasn't even a, but I just wanted to get his feedback on it, and he really liked the script, and he thought it would be interesting to have a studio head guy, and I was like, really? Oh, that could be interesting. I hadn't thought of that, but then it gave me an idea, well, you know, we should have something going on back. I knew we had to have something going back in the world, like why is nobody looking for these guys? And that was always an issue I had with the script. So we went back and came up with this idea for the studio guy. And then I didn't even think he was going to play it. I thought maybe he'd play the agent. He said, no, I think I'd play the studio guy. And he goes, I want to have really big hands. I was like, really? You want to have big hands? And he says, yeah, let me get these hands made up. I'll show you. And then I was like, all right, because I think you should be bald. I think you definitely should be bald. He's like, yeah, I'll be bald. And we did like a test. And we did like 3 or 4 makeup tests with him. And we developed this look, you know, this Grossman look, and we sort of like, you know, took the hair from his head and grafted it onto his chest, basically.
What about the dancing?
Yeah, it was. It's weird. The dancing evolved the same way this part evolved. It was really just organically. We were doing the makeup test. We were filming him the makeup test, and again, I just give him the credit. He's like, you know, I really feel like, because he had this fat suit on. He's like, I just want to move around like this guy. And he started doing this little dance, like this little weird dance. And I said, oh, that's funny. Do that. And the camera was on, and he started going fully with his dance. And then we got back, got the film back, and there was no music playing. So we put some music on it in the editing machine. And I was like, wow, this is like he's dancing in perfect time to this music that wasn't even there. And so then we wrote in the scene, both the scene where he's dancing with McConaughey, and then at the end, and then I said to Tommy, this dancing thing is so funny. I think it could be really funny at the end credits. Would you be into doing that? He's like, yeah, definitely.
I think you did Tom. I think he did himself a great service, and you. I think everyone. I watched it at the theater with a whole different view of Tom Cruise.
Yeah. Well, I think it's great for people to sort of, you know, be reminded of how, you know, incredibly funny he is too. Which, you know, he is. He's had humor in movies that have been serious films of people. I always think good actors have a sense of humor about their work, even if they're not known as comedy guys, like De Niro or something like that. Poor De Niro did comedies. You look at, like, you know, Raging Bull or, you know, Mean Streets, whatever. There's still fun. There's a lot of funny moments in them. That's the same thing with Tom. So
then back to this question of Robert Downey Jr., how did it come that he got to be cast, you know, playing blackface, essentially? I mean, did you have someone, black actor cast originally?
No. I mean, at one point I explored the idea of doing it with a black actor, the idea of a black actor playing a white guy and doing it that way. And that was like, you know, at one point over the like 5 or 6 years of the last 5 or 6 years of it. And then, you know, then I thought about that and I thought, I mean, all the parts, like it just went through so many different changes over the course of time. And then the idea came up with, well, would it be, you know, if we did it as a white guy playing a black guy, which was actually the way that it was written in the script, I'd almost not thought about that in the beginning because I thought, no, that would be, nobody would accept that. That was probably, honestly, you know, probably the first thought I had when we were originally doing it. And then when I did start to think about it the other way, I thought, well, you know, if there's a very short list of guys that people that could pull it off, if it could be pulled off, that people would accept, and even then there's no guarantee of it. So it just developed that way, and then, you know, that's when it sort of was like, wow, that could be interesting and different. And
so why did you do it ultimately, given that it could have been so offensive? What was?
Honestly, I just thought for the tone of this movie, this is a movie about actors taking themselves too seriously, actors going too far, an actor playing a mentally impaired guy to try to win an Oscar. You know, it's like that, you know, that's not really gonna go, you know, play too well sometimes, you know, with people also. The idea is like these guys are, it's like how far do actors go? How far is too far? And so in that way, a white guy doing this, playing this black role to find, you know, to challenge himself the most in a way that's wrong-headed and like going too far, to me, was that was the funnier idea, you know?
Now, this movie has a bigger scope than anything you have done before.
Yeah.
I mean, how challenging was for you to handle the pyrotechnics and, you know, the action scenes and other stuff?
It was challenging. You know, I think anybody who goes into one of these movies, the first thing you do is you work with, you get the people who have done these things before. So you hire the best special effects guy, and we were lucky to have the facility to hire. I had to get John Toll to shoot the movie, and get these, you know, Mike Minaris, a great special effects guy, and great aerial cinematographers, and worked with all these people who have done this before. Great second unit guy, a guy named Phil Nielsen, who's amazing. And you listen to them, and you sit with them, and you have meetings like this with people, and you ask them questions, and try to figure out how that all plays into the movie, the tone that you want for the movie. You know, I mean, I think the biggest danger is, like, it's not the execution of that stuff, because it really becomes about saying, like, I'd like a sequence like this, and I'd like to see that, and you sit with the storyboard guys, and you sit with the pre-viz, you know, computer animation guys, and all that stuff, and you figure it out. But it's really about, how does that work into the tone of the movie, so that, because, you know, the hard lesson that you learn, because as a director, I love all that stuff, and it's really fun to do, but the hard lesson you learn, you know, when you screen the movie, is like, at a comedy, people want to laugh. They don't care how many explosions you have. They don't care, you know, how much money you spent. They don't care what blew up or whatever. It's like, if they're not laughing, then the movie's not working. And that was really what I sort of learned as we went along. And so for me, I knew that there was something to having this stuff work in a real level that would help the reality level of the movie and the excitement of the movie, but it had to play into the tone of the comedy too. So that's the thing I didn't know. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how that would work, and that was sort of a trial and error thing. So I found out, I learned a lot about that, like in action sequences, you know, you end up keeping stuff in longer than you might normally in the cut process, because you go, well, we blew up that guard tower, you know, and that took a day, and that cost, you know, $100,000. I can't cut that. But then, you know, but psychologically you hang on to it, but then at the end of the day, you know, you got to do what's best for the movie. So you end up, like, hanging on to stuff you shouldn't hang on to until the last moment. So that kind of thing was, you know, it was interesting to learn all that and that process.
You've been watching a lot of BET or something, huh, with the booty sweat?
You've
been watching a lot of BET.
I enjoy BET. I'm a hip-hop fan.
When you talked about Empire of the Sun as the beginning,
right?
Did you know from the beginning that you wanted to incorporate all of these elements to satirize about Hollywood? Or did it sort of snowball as you went?
It always came from the original idea of actors in a war movie taking themselves too seriously and getting stuck out in a real situation. And then around that grew, you know, the backstory of the actors. And from the backstory of the actors, Kirk Lazarus and his whole, you know, Oscar-winning world, and Speedman's action world, and the idea of the hip-hop guy who sort of, like, you know, wants credibility as an actor, and, you know, the entrepreneur, and the, you know, the fat, funny guy who's, you know what I mean, like, wants to be taken seriously. They were all sort of like archetypes, and, you know, that sort of all, then it all sort of, the world grew around it.
Is this your way of you and your friends, like, telling yourselves, man, this, we're in a fun business, we're not brain surgeons. Is this your way of telling yourself, like, let's not take ourselves seriously, because a lot of Hollywood is? Because it seems like just a fun
yes,
movie where you're just
it
like,
is.
You know, like,
I was going to make a joke answer. No. Take us seriously. But no, it definitely is. I mean, that's what I was saying. Like, I don't think, and I don't know if I said it in this room or the room before, but like the, you know, no, probably the room before. You can't take yourself seriously. Yeah, somebody's asked me about Downey. Like, Downey had an issue because he, you know, had a past that involved drugs and stuff. Like, you know, was it weird on the set? It's like, you know, he has the best sense of humor about himself than anybody, more than anybody I know. And everybody involved in this movie has a sense of humor about how ridiculous this world can be. And it's worth making fun of, because people look at actors and I think they have this sense like, well, this guy thinks he's this, or he thinks he's that, or this guy takes himself too seriously. Like, we all have been guilty of that. Yeah. So you don't want it to be indulgent where you're just making jokes on yourselves that nobody cares about. But it's definitely like very easy to find the humor in people taking themselves too seriously.
Given that we're in a war right now with U.S. soldiers dying, were there any sensitivities you had to be careful of, you know, doing a comedy, basically, a war comedy?
Well, you know, when we started working on the movie, we weren't in a war. So it was interesting as the war started and we started working on this movie. You know, I wondered about that, and of course the movie always came back to me as, this is a movie about actors making a movie about a war and taking themselves too seriously. So I think, like, what would be, you know, what the tone of the movie is, even in wartime or not, should never be about making fun of war. It's not. It's about making fun of actors who take themselves seriously. The initial idea for me always came from friends I knew who were going off to do fake boot camps to be in in war movies, and they would come back and talk about how they had this life-changing experience. And it just seemed a little bit ironic to me. I was like, yeah, that must have been cool, the, you know, for 2 weeks and have Dale die, you know, setting off fake explosions and scaring you, but it has nothing to do with a real, you know, what it means to go to war. So that was where the humor was coming from, hopefully. But, yeah, you know, like tonight we're going down to Camp Pendleton. We're going to screen for Marines down there, and we've done a bunch of military screenings, and you know, I think the movie, it's like with any of the issues, whether it's the race issue or the, you know, Simple Jack issue, it's like we had to be clear about what our point of view was on the movie, what we thought was funny, and stand by that. And I give people credit for getting that. So, you know.
Can you talk a bit about the Jeffersons line?
The Jeffersons, yeah. Well, I that just came out of, you know, the idea of this character sort of like having, you know, I thought it was funny that sort of his wisdom and what he was talking about really comes off of some pop culture reference point, you know. And I grew up watching the Jeffersons and, you know, all those Norman Lear shows. And, you know, it's a joke that plays well here. It doesn't play well abroad as much because people don't know the Jeffersons as well.
And did you call the Al Pacino?
I did call Al Pacino. Yeah, I told him. Yeah, and he had a great sense of humor about it. I said, you know, there's this character and it's called Al Pacino, and he goes, great. At least I'm in a comedy. I thought that was cool.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, in November. I have to ask you.
I read in Rolling Stone where Russell Crowe suggested to Spike Lee that he played Joe Louis in a biopic.
Really?
Yeah, and that was the first thing I thought
of. Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm absolutely serious. It's in the American Gangster Denzel Washington Russell Crowe interview issue, and Spike Lee asked who should play Joe Louis. He said, well, how about me? And Spike Lee apparently gave him a very quizzical slash bitter look and walked away. So what I was wondering was, I mean, you chose him to be Australian.
Right.
I'm not asking you to name names, but...
Right. No, the way he became Australian was, first he was Irish, and, you know, I think everybody can draw their own conclusions. There's, you know, there's a handful of great actors. I think there's American guys, there's Irish guys, Australian guys. But he was going to be Irish, and then 2 weeks into shooting, we hadn't done any of the Australian stuff, or the Irish stuff at that time, and Downey said, you know, can I play him Australian? I just think I can do a better Australian accent than an Irish accent. I can improvise better in Australian.
I thought I had your
shirt. Yeah, no, you don't. You didn't. But I can't believe that. That's hilarious.
Yeah,
that's true. Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.